ShoeCast. Believe it or not, this is the Stitch Down ShoeCast, where we talk quality footwear, how it's made, and all the things that we love about it. I'm Ben from StitchDown.com, along, of course, with Ticho Blanco, and today we're here to do some extremely solid, but hopefully charming, rambling about our personal shoe journeys. How we got into this whole thing, what sparked it, mistakes, lucky breaks, maybe some vaguely brilliant maneuvers that we made along the way, and where this whole thing has taken us. So, Ticho, what has your shoe journey adorned your feet with today?
What's going on, Ben? I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Right now on my feet, I've got my Hiro Yanagamachi split toes and a beautiful French calf that I ordered from a trunk show at Le Faux in like 2016. These things are the most expensive shoes I own. They are what I kind of thought would be kind of the pinnacle of my shoe journey and absolutely still are. I mean, these things are just absolutely gorgeous. Recently gave them a little bit of an update. I was like, you know, my style's kind of changed. My lifestyle's kind of changed. Like, I need to, you know, maybe punch these up just slightly. So I have my buddy Greg, who's a patina artist, to give him a little patina update, a little nice burnishing. Check him out at Hancore, Hancore. Real cool guy. I think he's French, but he's like Korean. I just like this dude a lot. I hired him to shine shoes at our grand opening of our Taft store last year. It was really busy. He was like, nobody's asking me to shine shoes. Is it okay if I just like help customers? I was like, okay, man. And he made like 5 or 6 sales like really quickly. What? He was incredible. He didn't know anything. I don't think he knew anything about our products or anything. And he was still just like, just crushing it.
He's just that good.
He's just that good, man. I love that guy.
I'm going to hire him to sell something.
Yeah. Yeah, he's cool.
I have like a queen size box spring, like used 3 times, sitting in my garage. Would love to get something for it. Give me Greg's number.
I will. I bet he could do it. He works out of the like J. Fitzpatrick store in Soho. I bet he could just like lean it up outside there and like sell it to a weird street hipster that Soho is pretty chock full of. But what about you, man? What's adorning your toes today?
Well, they're adorning my whole feet. They're just ensconced in rare wine Horween reverse chamois on these benzene Chelseas on the Kujang last that by the time this airs should be available. As you know, as I've stated on this show before, I have never really managed to figure my way into being a, you know, dandy Chelsea boot lad, but I recently have really committed myself to working on that. Got this pair of Mark Albert's new Chelseas from his Italian collection. I've been wearing those a ton. Got these benzenes just yesterday. Wore them all day yesterday. Took a bunch of pictures. You know, I'm like starting to get it. I think that feels good. There's like an adjustment period, I guess. Like here's the thing about Chelsea boots. They don't have any laces on them. I don't know if you ever noticed that before. It's a little different. Have you noticed that?
You know, actually, I'm now noticing that as I take a look at my own benzene Chelseas.
They just don't have them.
It's just like you got this elastic gore. It's like, yeah, they either fit or they don't. There's nothing you could do about it. I'm so in on Chelseas, man. Rugged Chelseas, I think, are the future. I think everybody's gonna be rocking them. It's so easy. You pull them on, especially in like a chamois rough out like that or a wax flesh, like, you know, something that you could just really beat the heck out of. And they're just really comfortable, easy. Like I just leave mine by my door, you know, and I pull them on to go pick up a pizza. I put them on to go drive my son to school, you know, just it's so easy. It doesn't matter what the weather is. They're great. I'm glad you're finally coming around.
Let me tell you, I have not yet mastered the mechanics of pulling on a Chelsea boot very easily. I would say that I've actually been struggling with it. I think I need some more practice. Maybe the leather just needs to become a little more pliable and forgiving and understand like what I want it to do for me at that point in time. But once they're on, they feel great. They look great. I'm really happy with them. And, you know, I think the idea that in the last month, that I am very willfully forcing my way into Chelsea bootdom is something of a perfect representation of this shoe journey that we're on and that we're going to talk about today. But before we get into that, just want to give a special shout out to our sponsor this week, Mark Albert Boots, whose Chelsea's I just mentioned legitimately completely organically. But in addition to everything else he puts out, Mark's brought these Chelsea boots back, this new Made in Italy collection. He's got a Brogue country boot and all the classics, Kudu up and down the line. Give Mark a look and check out his episode from earlier in the season. It was a great interview. Loved it. Okay, Ticho, shoe journeys. So when we first started talking about this, we were originally going to make it an episode about Journeys, the shoe store in the mall from which I once bought a pair of orange and black patent leather Osiris high top sneakers. But we decided to go in a different direction, unless you still want to do that one.
Many a times have I, you know, strolled through the lovely malls of New Jersey. It's one of the things that we are, you know, best known for, our wonderful malls. No sales tax on clothing here in New Jersey. Makes it a great place to come shop. Yeah, I've been to a Journeys many times. I've made one purchase at a Journeys, and it was actually a pair of Osiris high tops as well.
Yes.
The year would have been 2008, and I was looking for something to wear to take my then friend and now wife to her senior prom. And I settled on I was like, you know what I'm going to do? Like, I'm not going to be that, you know, kind of like ska guy who wears the like Converse with his tuxedo. Like,
may have worn orange Converse to my senior prom. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No judgment. Like, no judgment for me, but like, I've always needed to be a little bit different. I've always needed to kind of forge my own path, especially footwear related. So I picked these things up. They're like white with like silver, kind of like almost like tattooed like skulls on them. These things are just horrifying. I'm like, I am thinking about this right now. This was
maybe a little too different.
Yeah, maybe a little bit much. The pants shoe interaction between these high tops and like a tuxedo pant, whew. Not good, my friend. Not good. A lot of bunching, a lot of like the, you know, getting tucked behind the tongue, like, you know, because those Osiris have that big fat tongue.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're incredibly comfortable shoes. They were just padded everywhere for when you like, you know, bite it on an ollie or whatever. Like, they're not actually supportive, but they're ready for impact or something.
Let me just add that I have never in my life stood on a skateboard, and I never plan to. To complete this outfit, I also had like a 10-inch mohawk. So that's what you were dealing with from old Ticho in 2008. It was a grim scene, and somehow my date was like, yeah, this is, I want to have two kids with that.
I can't believe you got a wife out of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to zig in order to zag, my friend. And that's kind of been my life story.
Ticho will be posting pictures of this entire Mohawk outfit ensemble on his Instagram after this episode airs. Looking forward to it.
I have burned every photo that exists of this event, as far as I know. Although I'm sure there's some floating around there somewhere. God, I hope not, though. I really hope not.
Everything's out there somewhere. I personally think that I won the Journeys Osiris battle. I really like those shoes. I wore them into the ground. But that's not really what we're doing these days. But I think that all this stuff, like every step along the way, it was completely necessary, maybe, I'd like to believe it was, to get us to where we are today, which is a place that, you know, for the moment, I think that we're quite content with. We talk about this shoe journey all the time, this plunge into this wonderful world of quality footwear. It's never a clear path. It's never a straight line. And I think that one of the things about the shoe journey that makes it really interesting is that it's different for every person. That's a huge part of what makes it so cool and interesting. But I feel like there are also a lot of similarities between people's journeys whenever I talk about somebody with theirs. And there definitely are between the two of us as well.
What I think is so interesting about the shoe journey is you can kind of, maybe I think about shoes too much and think about, you know, how shoes relate to the rest of my life more than other people. But like, you can look back at the shoes that you were wearing and buying through different times of your life. And it, you know, it's a reflection of, you know, what were you doing stylistically? You know, what were you doing? Was there a time where you were like working as a fishing guide and you needed to like wear, you know, these like rugged boots and like fishing stuff? Like, I don't really know what that would entail. I've never been fishing either.
You've never been fishing?
No fishing, no skateboards. Yeah.
You've never fished in your life?
I've eaten a fish. I mean, I like fish.
That's not fishing. It's a different thing.
No, I've never done it. Yeah.
All right. You got to change that. I'm not going to like urge you to, you know, start doing kickflips right now, but come on, you got to go fishing. What are you going to do when you're old?
Play golf.
No.
Yeah.
That's the main reason that I really started getting into fishing is because I hate golf and I need something to do when I'm old.
Yeah, I'm good with the golf. I'll stick with that. I like driving the cart. I've got a pretty smooth putting stroke. I used to work as a putting instructor at a Korean golf camp. True story about me.
I'm aware. All podcast listeners are aware of that.
Around the same time I appeared on Japanese TV, which is a story for another time. Yeah, man, I think it's an interesting reflection. You know, the shoes that you wear for different events in your life. Like, I can still remember the shoes I wore to my college graduation. I can remember the shoes I wore to my law school graduation. I can, you know, remember the shoes I wore to my wedding. Like, you have these special moments, but then it's also like the day to day. I remember the days when, you know, I was wearing my Alden Shell jumpers almost every day to commute to work in DC, you know, just taking those on the DC Metro every day. I remember these things and I can kind of track my progression of style and my lifestyle by looking at the shoes that I wore. That is kind of how I view that, because I see the world through the lens of shoes.
It's the best lens. Look, I think that for us to kind of really do this, we can't just start with, oh, this is my first great pair of shoes, and then I like got another one, and then, you know, I tried to get on a pair of Chelsea boots. I think we have to go all the way back to the beginning of this thing for both of us. What was it exactly that really, like, what was the genesis? What turned us into such obsessed, deranged individuals who spend their time thinking about Indonesian MTOs and, you know, instead of reading Chaucer and Tolstoy all day like most normal people do? Let's go back. Where did this all start for you? When were you like, I care about sneakers, I care about Tevas? Where did it start? Let's talk about Tevas a lot.
I definitely had Tevas as a kid. So we can give a shout out to Tevas for being like pretty solid sandals, right?
I had one pair of Tevas and I remember being like, this other guy has like, I don't know if they're like hiking Tevas, but like the straps were thicker and seemed kind of padded. And I was like, why can't I have those Tevas? You know, that's around the time I was probably like 12. That's probably when I like started to realize I had a problem.
That sounds like you're already in too deep when you're, you know, just admiring other people's Tevas. For me, it was, you know, I grew up in like a pretty wealthy, affluent town in New Jersey. Pretty comfortable upbringing. Like, I can't complain about that too much. I'd say like my family's probably in like the bottom third in terms of, you know, income for that town. You know, so my parents were kind of a little bit thriftier. They were, you know, more about getting stuff on sale. We shopped at like Sears was like where we bought all my clothes. And a lot of the time my mom would just like go to Sears and just be like, here, I got you all these clothes. And like, these are your clothes. Like, I didn't really go shopping for myself, pick out my own clothes. Like,
I don't think I ever did until, I don't know, maybe I was like 16.
Yeah. And like, I didn't, that wasn't a complaint for me. Like,
didn't care.
I'm sure if my mom was like, hey, let's go to Sears and like pick out some blue jeans, I'd be like, oh, geez, like just buy them in the bigger, a slightly bigger size than these ones.
Mom.
Like, I didn't want to go. Yeah, I didn't want to go. The Sears that we went to, it had like a cafe. She wouldn't even let me go like get a hot dog at the cafe. It was like, come on. Ugh, mom. But anyway, before like school started every year, she would take me downtown. There was like a Foot Locker and she was like, just pick out whatever shoes you want. Doesn't matter how much they cost. It doesn't matter what they look like. This was the thing that I got to pick out. And it was like the highlight of, you know, the end of the summer was like this big trip to Foot Locker or this other place, Bob's Stores. Do you have Bob's Stores?
Got Bob's Discount Furniture.
No, this is a different Bob. Different guy altogether.
Wait, you have no Bob's Discount Furniture?
Yeah, we have that too. Yeah.
I think he turned into a cartoon, or like maybe Bob's not around anymore because it used to always be Bob and now there's a cartoon of Bob.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the Empire Carpet guy, right? Where like that guy just died and they kept animating him. Like, could you imagine being his like grandkid and you're just, oh, grandpa died, but he just pops up on a commercial while you're watching Jerry Springer during the day as just like a cartoon of your grandfather's trying to sell you a carpet?
I think it's a beautiful thing. It's like putting ashes into your Allen Edmonds.
I'm not sure, man. Yeah, I might be like, oh, this is kind of weird. But I've never seen a cartoon of any of my grandparents on TV, so I can't really speak to that. But anyway, we'd go to one of these stores and like I would always, you know, I went through like, first it was like, oh, I'm going to get these like running shoes. You know, I'm like, I'm all about the comfort, all about like, it had to be a weird color.
Always.
Always the weirdest color I could find. I was all about some wacky, like bright red Nike Shocks kind of, you know, kind of things like
that.
Oh,
the Shock. I was wise to the Shocks. Silly trend. You probably, you know, jumped over like one fence just to test them out and were like, yeah, Shocks. Never felt the Shocks.
I found them.
They were hideous.
Yeah, like looking back, I'm like, I don't think those things did anything at all. But they had those ads where the guys are boinging around. And I remember the first time somebody showed up to like basketball practice with a pair of them. You know, the town I lived in, like people were always just like had all the newest shit all the time. Like that, whatever. But this dude shows up and we're like, oh, damn, like this guy's got the I'm not going to name drop him on this podcast. Oh, this kid's got the Shocks. He was like not one of the cooler kids. So other kids were like, all right, man. And we're like, all right, let's hear him. And so he just starts running around and they don't make any noise. They don't make the boing any noise, obviously. And everybody's just kind of like, that's a disappointment. But like I tried them on and I was like, you know what? They're pretty comfortable. I'm 12 years old. I'll take that little lift in the heel, man. Like I'll take as much height as I can get. And they're pretty comfortable. I didn't mind them.
And you just did a 360 windmill?
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, my basketball game was all about just hard fouls and chucking up long jumpers. So still is to this day.
Tight. You need that guy.
Yeah. Know what you're out there to do. But yeah, for me, that just like it turned shoes into this kind of like special purchase, right? It turned it into something that was personal to me. That was like really the only like way I got to make a statement about my clothing, you know, and my appearance and how I looked. Like still to this day, I kind of discount every other part of my outfits except for shoes. I'm kind of like, I don't dress super interesting or cool. Like I'm just like, I'm going to wear these cool shoes. I'm going to wear a pair of jeans and like a gray sweatshirt, you know. To me, shoes are the coolest piece of clothing that you can wear. That was true pretty much all the way through until college. Like I just, my mom would be like, oh, school's starting. Let's, you know, or it's cross country season. Like, let's go get you some new running shoes, you know? And I'd be like, yes, let me go get some like super weird bright yellow, you know, Asics or whatever. But yeah, that's kind of where it started. And that's where I kind of, if you go back and like, you know, psychoanalyze why I am the way I am about shoes, like, that's my explanation of it. So yeah, shout out to my mom for those trips to Foot Locker. Real special memory and something I'll always remember. What about you, man? Why are you the way you are?
Well, in some ways, and this is the theme, it's similar. In other ways, it's very different. So when I was, I don't know, 9, 10, whatever it was, Jordans had become a thing at this point. And I never had any. And other kids had them. And I actually, like, through sixth grade, I went to Catholic school. And then I switched over to public school. So in Catholic school, like, I don't even remember what shoes I was wearing. But, you know, they probably sucked. They weren't sneakers. So they were, like, just some boring, you know, black derbies or whatever. Everybody wore essentially the same shoes. Like, they weren't issued to you. But I can't imagine there was much variety. And I wasn't really thinking about it because you're wearing a damn uniform. Like, what can you do? But before that, I started playing Little League. And you start seeing all these kids like showing up before they switch into their cleats with like cool Nikes and Jordans. And I'm like, I gotta get some of these. And also I need to like get out of Catholic school so I can wear sneakers and wear hats. I set my sights on Jordan 4s. I was like, I need to have these shoes. And I begged my parents, especially my mom. And they were like, these shoes are expensive and you don't need them. We can get you like this other pair of Nikes that you don't want, that's not in a crazy color, for like $60. So this is what you're getting. And I'm like, fine. And like, it was never about like what the other kids would think of me. It was just like, holy shit, these are it. I need these things. And it didn't happen. Like, and it kind of continued to not happen. I would get these, you know, discount whatever Nikes and like play basketball in them. And I was like happy enough because, you know, eventually, like, I, especially with sneakers, sometimes it was colors, sometimes it was the design. Although, like, I tended more towards like classic stuff. Like, back then they were actually being made and then they started throwing everything back. And like, I still like those. there was always something that somebody else didn't want that eventually would be cheap. So like, okay, this is getting me halfway there. But then when I was like, you know, younger, I started like picking up jobs just so I could buy myself a pair of shoes and the ones that I wanted. My first pair that I saved up for, it was a pair of Nike Foamposite Pros, the second Foamposites that ever came out, Penny Hardaway shoes. And they were $170, which at the time was like fucking crazy. It was way more than any Jordans. And I was like, I got these shoes. And they looked like a space shoe. They were like bright white and all this wacky foam. But they were also like really beautiful, incredibly comfortable. Everybody was like, yo, what are those? And I remember this other kid in school and like two grades younger, like got them. I was like, dude, you can't have these shoes. These are my shoes. And he just kept wearing them, which was, you know, a little upsetting. I thought that he was going to listen. Yeah. So it was like yours was built out of, you know, generosity and understanding and, you know, these magical moments. My obsession was completely built out of denial and like blockage and being like, how do I get these things? Both work. Both can like really set you down the path, clearly.
Yeah, it's interesting how, yeah, the opposite reaction from our moms kind of brought us to the same place. Like, but yeah, for me, it was just like, okay, it made it all about the shoes. It made it, this is the coolest part of my outfit. And then as I got into high school and, you know, started working first as a caddy at a country club, and those dudes were just like, you know, pretty generous tippers. I was a great caddy. I could do the two bags. A lot of times they'd buy me a Gatorade and a hot dog at the turn. Like
a lot of hot dogs in your childhood, except not the Sears ones.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I've denied the Sears hot dog, and it just leads me to a super hot dog-centric lifestyle.
It's like, how do I get great shoes? How do I get people to buy me hot dogs? Even though nothing is a Sears hot dog. We all know that.
I couldn't even tell you if they're good, man. I've never had one, and they have essentially demolished that Sears.
Is anything from Sears good? Other than like Craftsman tools in the 90s, maybe?
They used to sell houses, and I think the houses are pretty good. A lot of them are still standing.
Really?
Yeah. I think the house I grew up in was a Sears house from like the 1930s or whatever, when they'd like send it to you on a railroad car or something like that.
I'll have to Wikipedia this.
It's a good Wikipedia. Yeah, well, then after that, I started working at a hot dog restaurant, which is where I...
it was faded.
I've just always been into hot dogs. When I was a little kid, you know, I think I was in like second or third grade, we did like a thing where you take like a tin can and you like punch holes in a little design, and then you put some
hot dogs in it.
No, you put tissue paper behind it and you make like a Christmas ornament.
Sure.
You know, kids are doing little Christmas trees, kids are doing, you know, one kid I think did an ornament on the ornament, which was like pretty meta. I like that. This is 100% true. I made a hot dog.
I hope you still have it. I hope it's still on your parents' tree.
It is absolutely still set aside for me to put on the tree when I go over to my parents' house on Christmas. Oh man, I was such a strange kid, and now I'm looking back, I'm like, why am I such a strange man? And it's like
hot dogs.
It's just, I've always just been strange. But yeah, man, so I started, you know, you start working and you get some money and it's like, well, what do you buy? Like,
until you have a car, it's shoes and like candy.
Bought a ton of candy, dude. Fun Dip, it was like my first addiction. I could buy it at the Y after I would work out at the Y pretty hard, do like a lot of leg presses. I feel like I am 3 inches shorter than I should be because I just was so into doing leg presses. But I could leg press like, I don't know, like 450 pounds or something when I was in like eighth grade. And then I'd go downstairs to the vending machine and buy like 4 or 5 things of Fun Dip and just crush those on my walk home.
Could have done 600 if you ate the Fun Dip beforehand.
That's probably true. I didn't know a lot about nutrition or workout science or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I should have just been like crushing protein shakes. Maybe I'd be like, you know, 6'5 instead of, you know, however tall I am, 5'11, I'll say. It says 6 foot on my driver's license, but like that's a damn lie. So yeah, I'm like starting to work, and I'm like in a town that has a Foot Locker, and I'm also cruising out to this Bob's, which like has a ton of sneakers that are like discounted or whatever. Like Bob's has some good deals. If you live near a Bob's, there's not a lot of them, but like they've got some cool stuff. I once bought a pair of Timberlands there. Like, I don't really know what I was thinking there.
Like the classic Timberland, whatever they're called, boots?
Yeah, they were like, I mean, they were like the Timberland Pro, like.
Ooh.
I was like dismantling my parents' deck or something. And I was like, oh, I gotta get some like work boots. I'm gonna, maybe I'll work like construction over the summer or something. Like, I don't know what I was thinking, man. Like, again, I was eating like a ton of Fun Dip at the time. So I just to get into, you know, buying all these like kind of wacky, like wacky Nike, you know, SB stuff. Like then like later as I would start like, you know, traveling a little bit more, like we'd go into the city all the time, like me and my friends in high school. And like you could just find all these like stores that had like weird, maybe some of them were fake Nikes. Like, I don't even know. But, you know, we would just like hop on the train, go into the city, find like an unscrupulous adult to buy us. This was even before Four Loko, but it was the like alcoholic energy drinks. I think they were called like Sparks.
Oh yeah, Sparks. Like that. That was the first one. It was in like a reasonably sized can.
Yeah, yeah. And we would just like go out, you know, get like a bunch of those, walk around like random crummy neighborhoods, like go see what all the like really crusty punks were doing at like Tompkins Square Park. And then we'd like go into these weird stores that had just like, you know, all these Nikes and stuff. And I'd always just like buy some Nikes. I think I bought like a bright green Adidas tracksuit that like never fit me. And I don't really know why I bought it. And I'm now that I'm thinking about it, it was probably the Sparks.
Don't tracksuits fit everybody? Isn't that the whole point?
Like, it was just too big and like boxy and baggy. Cause I'm like,
you're describing a tracksuit.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. It didn't work for me. Yeah, man. So I was finding all these kind of like interesting colorways of sneakers. I got really into just like trying to like match my sneakers and the rest of my outfits. Problematic. Not a great. I mean, I know that people probably still do this, but like wasn't my jam. I shouldn't have been doing it. It was, a lot of it was like neon greens, like a lot of black and white and neon green. It was not good. But then like the internet kind of became more of a thing. And I was like, oh, I don't have to like go on these weird excursions to find sneakers. Like, I can just go shop online.
Total downgrade, honestly.
Yeah, maybe a little bit less fun, but, you know, whatever. Starting college, kind of settling into like not being a piece of, you know, street garbage who, you know, just like drinks alcoholic energy drinks during the day while cutting school. Like, I should have been in school at this time. Like, this wasn't like a weekend adventure. Because again, I worked at a hot dog restaurant and like Saturdays always slammed. So had to be there. Also, when I was in high school, I had a Saturday detention basically every Saturday for cutting school to go, you know, do these other things, right?
Busy schedule.
Very busy schedule for young Ticho. And also at that hot dog restaurant where I acquired the nickname Ticho Blanco, which I think I've explained before.
Yeah, again, I think shopping online versus like Sparks in Tompkins Square Park and then like making possibly bad but ultimately wonderful sneaker decisions in New York City. I see that as a downgrade. Ticho, you are a young man. If Harrison Ford took a picture of you in a blazer, he might make the file name Young Cool Ticho in Blazer. I'm at least 1 year older than you, which means that when we were young, things were slightly different. The internet like wasn't really around when I was in high school. There were AOL chat rooms, which were really fun. And if you wanted to download like maybe a picture of something that a 16-year-old boy would want to look at, it would take like 3 hours. You would like call your friends over. You'd be like, I got one. But for me, it was all about catalogs. It was the East Bay catalog where I was getting like Adidas sneakers, tons of ASICs, like all this stuff. I think I got the Foamposites from East Bay, which like every time that thing shows up in the mail, you're like, what do they got? What do they got? And you're tearing through it, looking at the new stuff, looking at the sales section, all of this. And then I was super into soccer catalogs because I was playing soccer. So there was the Eurosport catalog, which is like the high-end one. And then Acme Soccer and Widget Works, which was like a dumb name, like an ironic name. I don't know where it came from, but they had good stuff too. So I was getting like kangaroo leather Copas. I got Puma Kings. I was trying out like, you know, there's like normal cleats and then there's the screw-in studs for like wet weather. I got those. They hurt my feet. I didn't really wear them, but I was like, I just need another pair. It was probably the wrong pair. So I'm like stocking up on all these things with this money from work. I got a pair of Samba kangaroo leather shoes for like indoor soccer. Now, mind you, none of this mattered. I was a goalie. I didn't like use my feet on the field except for like three times a game. But I had to have this stuff. I was like totally obsessed with like, what's the best one and what's the new technology? Even though at that point, like wasn't really like the shoes weren't like rubber and having like fins on them at that point. But it helped me realize that good leather is important. Like this kangaroo leather, again, I didn't really utilize it. But man, it was like really soft. And everybody talked about like how much better it gripped the ball. Got a pair of Jordan 3s like a little bit later, but they were like really nice. I still have them. Like the leather is wonderful. It's not like crappy plasticky shit. Good dunks, all this stuff. So like that definitely stuck with me. But, you know, the whole idea of ordering all this stuff from catalogs, it was kind of similar. Now it's sneakers. They're probably going to fit if you get close to the right size. It's not like shoes. You know, it kind of was this like precursor to the internet where you're like, what am I really getting? I'm picking out like something because of how it looks. Which like I think kind of like trained me to figure out how to deal with internet shopping like in certain ways. Yeah, it was like, I don't know. It was always about the shoes. And because a goalie actually does use his hands, goalie gloves. I was obsessed with goalie gloves. I had to get whatever Tony Miola had, which was Roysch gloves. Oh, they were so fun. They were like $120 a piece at times, and they like fall apart in three games. They would just give him to Tony Miola.
I have no idea who that is, man.
He was the goalkeeper for the U.S. national team.
Nah, dude. Tim Howard was the goalie when I was, like, you know, high school, college age. So, like, that's the guy I know as the U.S. goalie. How old are you, man?
At least 1 year older than you.
You might be, like, really old, bro.
It's possible. And on that note, let's take a break. And welcome, everyone, to Stitch Down Shoe Storytime. Once upon a time, there was a boy named Mark. Mark lived in Pennsylvania. More than anything else, like all boys, everywhere in the world, Mark wanted a pair of Chelsea boots. But Mark couldn't find any Chelsea boots that he wanted. So Mark drew pictures of Chelsea boots, so many pictures of Chelsea boots. And one day, he went to the shoe factory in his town in Pennsylvania and said to them, "Hello, shoe factory. Can you make me some Chelsea boots?" And they did. Before Mark knew it, he had an entire boot company. Mark Albert Boots, he called it. And Mark Albert Boots was very good. Outriders and uptowns and loafers, oh my! But despite making so many other fantastic boots and incredible and interesting leathers, there were no Chelsea boots anymore. And it was then that Mark decided he wanted to make Chelsea boots for everybody. So Mark took a trip to Italy, where his grandfather, a master cobbler, had grown up. And Mark found another factory, a very wonderful factory, and said, "I would like you to make my Chelsea boots." And they did. And then I personally wore a pair of them in black waxy commander leather for like a month, and I'm honestly really impressed. And then the factory also made him a very unique and wonderful country boot that you should also absolutely check out. The end. Podcaster's note, I only said the end, because this is the part in stories where you generally say the end. Except it's not the end for Mark. There's oh so much more to come. The end. All right, we're back. While we were on break, we talked a little bit about how I grew a terrible ponytail because Tony Miola had one. And I went to his soccer camp and he like didn't really come. And I was disappointed, but possibly became a better goalkeeper. But the whole point here is that everything's revolving around footwear for both of us. And it took each of us a little bit to kind of click on, okay, I care about sneakers. I care about kangaroo leather cleats. Now I care about the real stuff. And then like you got there a little quicker than me.
So yeah, we're talking like, I'm in college, so probably like, I don't know, 21, 22. And I'm, you know, I stumble on endclothing.com. I'm looking for these, you know, weird Adidas boat shoe kind of things that are like sold. For me, with sneakers, I was always looking for something that had like been sold out from like three seasons before. And like, I would find pictures of it online and be like, oh, I need this, you know, I need these like Kazuki Karashi, you know, Adidas collabs, and you can't buy them anywhere. And the only place you could buy them is like, you know, they're just obviously fake. I stumble onto End Clothing. They have it. They're on like clearance. They've obviously been sitting there for like 2 years or something. I buy them. But like while I'm browsing the site, I'm like, man, they've got like a lot of cool stuff on this website. Like they've got so many Nikes, so many Adidas. But then they also had this just like a banner at the top. And it was the Alden 975. And I was like, wow. I just looked at it and I just completely fell in love with the long wing style, the color 8 shell. I clicked through the website to try to find it. And again, I'm like in college and I'm just like, holy shit, these are so expensive.
What were they back then?
I want to say they were like $600, something like that. Maybe 650, something along those lines.
Yeah. Instant cop.
No. Absolutely not for me. I'm like still not there. I'm still probably at this point I probably have like another 2 years of college left, and I spend that time just picking up croc print Adidas kind of Samba kind of shoes, which I still have and walk my dog in. Actually, that was a good purchase. I'm just messing around with sneakers. I'm messing around with other stuff. I think I would like go to DSW often, and like I remember one year I picked up some like loafers that are like, you know, that very like European chiseled like loafer with like kind of a weird like distressed patina on them. They were like gray.
Gotta have them.
Probably cost like, you know, like $35, right? And I wore them to like a birthday. It was like, oh, we're going to have, Patrick's birthday dinner. That was another like really special thing my parents would always do. It's like on your birthday, you got to choose where we went out to dinner, and they didn't care where it was. They would take us. For most of my childhood, it was Applebee's.
Get it.
I'd be like, I'm going to Applebee's. I'm getting a half pound cheeseburger cooked medium and like some French fries. And I'm going to drink a bunch of Cokes and like get an ice cream sundae. And like, I thought that was the pinnacle of dining to me.
Eating good in the neighborhood.
Eventually a Chili's opened up. I switched over to the Chili's for a couple years.
Chili's nachos, dude. Those individually cheesed nachos. Like each nacho is completely self-contained. Ugh.
The queso dip thing is incredible. That is like a national treasure to me. That Chili's queso dip.
Chili's is legit. Every once in a while, there's one in an airport.
That's a good airport move. Yeah. I agree with that. Just like, oh, I'm just going to get some boneless buffalo wings. Like, it's going to be fine.
I schedule long layovers in O'Hare just to go hang out at that Chili's for like 2 hours.
So I remember I got these loafers and I was like, yeah, I'm just going to like wear these loafers, but couldn't, you know, it didn't go with any of my outfit at all. You know, I'm wearing kind of like bootcut Levi's and like, you know, a hoodie. Right. I've always been a big hoodie guy. I love a hoodie. I'm wearing just like these wacky loafers with them. And we went to a Famous Dave's. Do you guys have Famous Dave's? It's like a barbecue, kind of barbecue chain.
I know it exists. Never been.
It's good. It's good. I feel like a lot of them have maybe closed in the last couple of years, which is a shame.
Not so famous.
Yeah. Maybe not as famous anymore. And Famous Dave looked exactly like my friend's dad. And I remember that he once took us there and the people at the Famous Dave's thought that he was Famous Dave and thought he was like doing an undercover kind of thing and like gave us really good service. But like he legit looked exactly like this guy. It was pretty funny. And I'm wearing these loafers and like my dad just looks at me. He's like, are you wearing loafers right now? Like kind of throwing a little shade at me. Like, come on, man. Like, what are you doing here? And I felt like, yeah, like he's kind of right. Like none of this works. It's not together. I like these shoes, but like it needs to kind of fit with my outfit a little bit more. Like I need to go back to the drawing board here. Like I've always been willing to experiment and try new things and try different styles. And like, you know, but that was the first time I realized like, yeah, if you're going to do that, like make sure you have the outfits to go along with it.
What outfit would have gone along with those particular over patina gray Euro loafers?
I'm going to say like super duper skinny jeans, like a G-Star Raw t-shirt, and like a pack of American Spirits.
Feeling it.
Probably at the time, also like an Adidas track jacket, which...
Track top, not the whole suit.
Not the whole suit, no, because you need like a real thin jean.
Need a taper.
Yeah, you got to have like a real skinny jean on that. Which at the time, you couldn't really get that kind of jean. Like when I was in high school, here's one for the blackmail file. Bought women's jeans for like 2 years of high school because they were the only like slimmer cut jeans that you could get.
This explains everything.
And I was going for like kind of a Robert Plant inspired vibe where I just had a huge mop of hair on my head and would, you know, perform it in bands in just like shimmering silk shirts, just wide open.
This explains the skinny jean engineer thing for sure.
Yeah, and it explains, like, I have to be a little bit of a contrarian, and I have to push the boundaries a little bit and try different stuff. So that's just me, man. That's who I am, and it's what I'm about, and that's kind of tracked, I think, all through this journey. But anyway, I'm like, you know, I'm cruising End Clothing pretty hard. They always have some pretty solid sales. It's my senior year of college, and I'm like, yeah, I'm about to, like, graduate college. I've been accepted into, like, a really good law school. Got, like, a nice scholarship there, like... Let me get, like, a nice pair of shoes for my graduation. And so, but, like, also, I don't actually have any money because I'm, you know, still in college. I go and they have a pair of quaddies on sale for, like, $115 maybe.
Definitely some cop.
Size 11, which I now know is, like, a full size too big. Black Chrome XL. My first, like, I'm reading about the, you know, it's got, like, a little blurb about the Chrome XL leather. And I'm like... Oh, like leather can be tanned in like different ways and have different properties, and like I'm kind of interested to check this out. And it was like a three eyelet boat shoe with like the crisscross baseball stitching. I get them in. I'm like, you know, they're fully lined. They're like pretty warm, especially for like my college graduation. It was like pretty hot. I didn't wear them at all beforehand because I was like, well, I'm gonna, you know, I want them looking fresh for this graduation. I'm wearing this, you know, plastic robe, and I am just roasting alive in these things, man. Like, I was so warm. I had to walk a whole bunch, you know, for the graduation. Had terrible blisters from them being too big and, like, you know, just not fitting very well. But I was like, yeah, these are dope. This is great. Like, I did a bunch of, you know, research about the company. I, you know, on their website, there's a picture of a rugged looking New Englandy guy wearing a Red Sox hat, like just making these things by hand. I'm like, yeah, that's what this is about. I should be thinking about who's making these shoes, not just like, what do they look like? And do I think these are cool? Like, whatever. Like, yeah, I should be thinking about this stuff. Like, that's important. Like, that's kind of an important first lesson about a lot of other things that are now important to me. So I wore these things. I was like, yeah, I think I worked at a law firm that summer as like an intern. And I was like wearing them like every day. They were pretty cool, man. I enjoyed those quaddies. And I eventually was like, oh, yeah, these just don't fit at all. And I think I actually sold them for more than I paid for them because I'd gotten such a good deal, kind of just by accident.
You were in.
That was it. I was in. I was like, this is what this is about. It's about handmade things. It's about interesting leathers. It's about knowing where these things come from and doing research about shoe companies and stuff. And from there, I was just digging in on all sorts of different brands, learning about different stuff. The rest is kind of history on that, you know?
Man. So you, like I mentioned, you kind of, at least compared to me, really fast-tracked this thing. And now I will tell you about some of the dark times that I had. All through college, I mean, it was 100% sneakers. They were always really good. People like, Ben has cool shoes. Oh, Ben, what shoes are those? I'm like, I don't really have, you know, that many shoes. I'm in college. You've seen these before. Maybe they're just really dirty now. After college, I moved to Boulder, Colorado. I get a job in this bar, Connor O'Neill's. It's not there anymore, but it was a great place. And they're like, you got to get black pants and you got to get black shoes. And I was like, perfect. This is a great excuse to get a pair of black high top Nikes. I'll like have a second pair of shoes to play basketball in. Done. And I like found some cheap ones because I like didn't really care. You know, they were like to be beaten. It was also, it was an Irish bar. It was famous for its car bomb Thursdays where you got an Irish car bomb for $3. You're familiar with the drink, I imagine.
I've never had one, but it's some kind of, you're dropping one drink into another drink, right?
So let me explain it. You've got half a glass of Guinness. You've got a shot that is half Irish whiskey. You know, Jameson, but like never actually Jameson, half Bailey's, and you drop it in. When you drop it, you're supposed to drink it immediately. If you do, it tastes like okay, I guess. And if you don't, within seconds, it curdles horrifically and eventually will turn into like a solid. Everybody came, they're so excited about these car bombs, and like, would just drop it in and then like let it sit or like sip it or like all these just bizarre approaches to it. And then I would have to go around and pick up all these glasses and turn them upside down into a glass rack which I would then have to carry like high in the air over my head because the bar was fucking packed every Thursday. And this curdled mess was just dripping everywhere. It was on the floor. So like I knew this was going to happen. So I didn't get a very like nice pair of shoes that I cared about. This is a huge missed opportunity for me that I lament to this day. What I should have done is said, you know what? I got myself a job. I can get whatever I want, which is like how you should approach pretty much getting any job, like buy yourself a pair of shoes that you wouldn't otherwise, and gotten like a pair of Black Iron Rangers or like something like that. And I would have been in this thing much earlier, but I didn't. The pair of shoes that I did have back then, because I was also like, I was working some freelance journalism jobs. I had this pair of Timberland like derbies, I guess, with this huge lug sole. They were like some kind of brown leather. It was actually kind of nice. And my grandmother had given them to me when I graduated college. And these things were full absolute chonk. And I think these things somehow have stuck with me to this day. And like, they look better than a pair of sneakers. Looking back, maybe they didn't even look that bad. Like, I might be into these things these days, but they were like the shoes I wore when I had to wear shoes and didn't really want to. You know, I'm still there, like not quite getting it, but they certainly could have been worse. I moved back to New York. I get like, a real job in an office. And for some reason, the pair of shoes that I think I need are, you know, they were Aldos or like, who knows what they were. They were loafers. Very like high vamp, like coming all the way up with like kind of this block toe, boxy as hell, elastic gore on both sides of each shoe so you can like slip it on better. And they made my feet stink to no end, and I could like smell it under the desk. But I like kept persevering with these things, and I was like, this is it. They were actually pretty comfortable, but really like quite a horrifying shoe looking back.
Man,
we're letting it all out here. You're like, oh yeah, and then I got these quaddies and like I had it all figured out, and like here I am just like my feet sweating.
Hey man, you know, it's not like it was completely smooth right from there. There's been I could go on for hours about all my bad purchases and missteps and all this kind of stuff, but that
I am apparently.
Yeah, you're just diving right in, man. That might be we could dive into Ticho's mistakes, but that might be like a 4-part episode.
Actually, we probably should do that. Just like, but I continue to make progress. And again, I'm like still like full sneakerhead, but things are kind of like coming around, basically. And through my job at the time, I would occasionally get sent shoes. It was like, it was a different job, but it kind of paralleled what I do now. So Timberland sent me this pair of giant chunky mock toes that I completely forgot about because I was like going through everything before we did this episode and like trying to make the list of this progression. Forgot about them until my brother sent me a picture from back when I had these things. And I was like, oh yeah. But then I also got a pair of Timberland Boot Company, which I think is still exists as this sub-brand, but they were like, we're doing it different. We're making it real. I think they might've been making them in the US using higher quality materials and had these like archival looking patterns that they were using. And like the whole thing just kind of felt like old and cool. And these things were like a little higher than a chukka, still like shorter than an ankle. They were like a very kind of strange height, but they were like really nice. I remember being like, oh, okay, I get it. These are great boots. I'm like into boots now. And they didn't fit. And I'm like wearing them with like the thinnest possible socks I could find, no socks, whatever. But yeah, I don't know if you like remember this Timberland Boot Company moment, but like they gave it a shot and clearly it didn't take. But yeah, that was like another whiff. Like if those had fit, I think that, you know, like the path would have become clear a little earlier again.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe the Timberland Boot Co. whatever was just maybe a couple years ahead of their time there.
Honestly, I think they were. So then after that, another like very positive step, especially towards quality. Way back, I mentioned this on previous episode, I found out about Fight shoes when they were making largely sneakers and some boots, and really nothing that looks like what it did today. It was like a carryover. It's these two brothers from Australia, Tull and Josh Price, and they started this kind of like skateboarding shoe company that was really cool, Royal Elastics, which were these kind of like super funky slip-on shoes. And then Fight was this evolution from there where they're like, we're going to make the best sneakers that have ever existed. Like just incredibly high quality materials. The designs were very unique, but they like really, really spoke to me. So I find him in the Sneaker Freaker magazine. I get in touch with Tull. He's living in New York. Like we go, we hang out. He's like, I got all these shoes in my apartment. Come over. I'll sell you a bunch for cheap. So I got like three pairs, including this one pair of Chukka boots. They were like kind of a Chukka sneaker. Like it wasn't Goodyear Well construction or anything. It was definitely cemented, but I still have these things. And they were like just really, 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 really nice. Like the leather was beautiful. They had like all these cool touches, like definitely funky, but also like fairly straightforward in terms of like colors and patterns and everything. Also, this like super high pair of like really aggressive all black combat boots. It seemed like they were from like Blade Runner, but Blade Runner was like even further into a weird future where like everything had a lot of angles on it. I couldn't get my head around them. They were great. And eventually I ended up giving them to somebody, maybe my brother, who ended up getting a couple pair of the Fight sneakers that didn't really fit me. That was like, okay, there's something here, especially in terms of quality. The gap between these things and like any other pair of sneakers that you can get was just astronomical, and like in the build heft to it. And like I really started to fall in love with that kind of thing. And then a big breakthrough happened, but again, it was a bit handicapped. I met this guy, Michael Williams, who ran this blog and still to this day does, although he just doesn't do it as often, called A Continuous Lean, which was kind of this like early proto, like thinky, really like beautifully made. Like I'm a man out in the world and like I care about beautiful things that are well made, and I'm going to talk to you about shops and products and like just drop in when I find something interesting.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about maybe Michael K. Williams from The Wire.
Wait, did I ever tell you about the time when I almost moved into an apartment in Brooklyn because the broker was like, oh, and by the way, Omar lives in this apartment and he sometimes hangs out with the people in it and like smokes weed with them. And I was like, dude who like I'm trying to be a roommate with, like this is the place where we should move. He's like, like I don't know about like the natural light. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Dude, who cares about the natural light when you can hang out with Omar, man? That sounds incredible. What a missed opportunity.
My whole story is about like not even near misses, like far misses. Like what a path that would have been. What a journey. Journey into Omar's house. But so Mike Williams is like, he's also a publicist. He's like, I'm working with Wolverine. These boots that they make, you love shoes. You got to try some of these things. Like all these sneakers, sure. But like you got to get yourself into some of these. And I'm like, yeah, send me some Wolverines. So he's like, just, you know, go with the basics. Brown, 1,000-mile boot. You're going to dig it, I promise. He's like, what size are you? I'm like, I'm a 12. He's like, okay, so you'll probably need like, you know, maybe 11, maybe 10 and a half. I'm like, no, dude, I'm a 12. Send me the 12s. He's like, okay. So he sends them to me. They're wonderful boots, you know, leather sole, the whole deal. Of course, they're like a size and a half too big, like in... like some sneakers I was 11 and a half and some like I kind of wanted to be a 12. These things were huge, but I wore them, you know, kind of if I had to like dress up, and they were great. Like they sucked in the winter. Like there were like various problems with them. It's like, oh, I got a pair of boots to wear in the winter. And then you're like sliding around on the ice, but this was it. And I started to taste it and like wore them for years and years with like thicker and thicker socks. And eventually, like, lost them. Like, I think somebody stole them off my desk at work, which is, you know, kind of weird, but also commendable.
What a strange thing to steal from somebody else at your office. Like, who? That's weird, man.
Nobody else was, like, wearing these kind of boots at that time either. So I don't think they thought they were theirs. I also had a pair of, like, 4-year-old Birkenstocks stolen from the sideline at a lacrosse game. I like drove there in them and then put on my cleats, and then I came back and they were gone and they were disgusting. And then I had to drive home barefoot. It was kind of a long drive.
So you were playing in the lacrosse game, or you just... I could also see you just sitting in the stands putting on cleats just to spectate.
Yeah, whenever I go to any game, I wear the footwear that the people playing it wear every time.
What do you do when you go to like a water polo game?
I figure out what shoes they wear to the water polo game, and then I wear them to there, and then I take them off.
What about like an actual polo game? Do you do like horseshoes? What do you do?
Yes. Getting them put in, pretty rough. Getting them taken out, that's the part that people don't think about with horseshoes.
I definitely have never thought about that.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. The horses want to keep them in, believe me.
What do you do when you go watch a game of horseshoes?
I only watch those on TV.
Good call.
But yeah, that was like, that was it. That was the start for me. And I think because they were the wrong size, because like, frankly, like at this point, it was, for me at least, it was a bit of a high point for, you know, like the newer sneaker game. And they were coming out with all this retro stuff. This was like pre-Yeezys and Balenciagas and like all that stuff that like, frankly, really turned me off to a lot of sneakers, in addition to some other things that like happened in my life, which I think we're going to have to talk about on a continuation episode of our journeys. If people are actually somehow enjoying these crazy random yarns that we're spinning about this. So, you know, please let us know. We can definitely keep doing this kind of forever. But yeah, like I was in it. I started to get it. I appreciated the quality and the craftsmanship and like just something that looked completely different than what I was wearing, even if I couldn't fully commit to it. Seeds were planted at this point. And, you know, they felt good. Like, you know, sometimes a tree takes a long time to grow.
Yeah. You know, man, like I think the most important thing for personal growth is to understand yourself. I went through a phase where I read a lot of the like Gnostic Gospels, which are like, you know, like ancient texts that were excluded from the Bible later on, which is like a thing that if anybody wants to talk about, like hit me up. I love talking about them. But like one of the most important concepts from them is that first and foremost, you have to understand yourself and you have to understand your own motivations and why you do things and why you think the way you think. And, you know, I've put a lot of thought into like, what's the deal with the shoes? Why do you love the shoes so much, man? And I just look back through this story, that through this journey that I've been on, you know, it kind of gives me a little bit more context for decisions that I'm making every day. So, you know, I encourage everybody to take a long look at, you know, how you got where you are, and, you know, it'll maybe help you understand where you're going.
Yeah, I think that beginning to understand it is exciting, but also like kind of a little scary. And you're like, oh, I don't know, it's like, is this me? Like, guess what? These things are expensive, more than I'm used to. It's really once you fully commit to it and you're like, this is what I'm going to figure out, which is like a little bit later in my tale. This is what I'm going to do kind of with my life, you know, certainly with my leisure time. Like for the longest time, and like living in New York is the greatest place to do this. Like you're on the streets, but like especially on the subways, I would just look at everybody's sneakers and anything else that anybody else was wearing, like kind of just didn't notice it because there were like too many feet and I was like looking at the sneakers and I was like, I needed to know everything about them. Now, today, if somebody's wearing a pair of sneakers, like, I don't really notice that, even though, you know, there's, like, fewer great pairs of shoes to look at. Quick sidebar here, you know, this is our world, this is our lives, we're doing, again, as I say every episode almost, a goddamn podcast about it, and people are listening, somehow. How many times do you see, like, even a pair of indie boots out in the wild? Like, it's still an exciting thing, you're like, oh, look. There's somebody. They understand.
I'm right there with you. The first thing I notice about everybody I meet, see on the street, whatever, is I take a peek at their shoes, see what they're wearing. You know, in New York City nowadays, like, you see some good stuff. Like, I'm in Soho a lot. Like, people are... There's still a lot of horror stories that I see on a daily basis. But, like...
It's rife.
The amount of times I see people just, like... You know, I saw a dude wearing Vibergs, and I was like, oh shit, that, like, from across the street, like, I'm not gonna go talk to you. Like, I clock it, I give it a look, and it's pretty cool, man. It's cool to kind of see see all this stuff growing, becoming more mainstream, becoming more common to see, at least in like maybe big cities. Out in the suburbs where I live, I never see anybody wearing cool shoes. So that's kind of a bummer.
No, my neighbors, like I've explained it to them in a way that like they get it and accept it. And I haven't even lived here that long. But like the first neighbor I met, he's like, what are those? Are those like steampunk boots? It was like my Judd Frost indies that are just Regina Grain with brass eyelets. I was like, I don't think so. But, you know, I think that's a good way to explain it. Like new neighbor that I'm trying to, you know, make nice with.
Yeah, I've had some neighbors kind of ask me about it because they're like, see, like you like work at a shoe store? And they're like, oh, so that's the shoes that you like sell at the store? I'm like, well, like not really. No, these are, you know, I'm not going to get into it too much. Or like, the other thing is I try not to take my shoe pictures like in town because I don't want to be the shoe picture guy here in the very small town that I live in.
I know. We talked about that on an earlier episode, and thus far I've taken your advice. I just like go into the woods where nobody's going to see me.
Exactly. You got to find those very quiet, isolated places where nobody's going to notice. But then there's like this abandoned bridge near my house, and it's just the most convenient place to just go take a quick photo that has like somewhat of an interesting background. And all the time I'm there and people are just walking by or like driving by and looking at me. And I'm like, this is like too close to my house. Like I'm literally around the corner. This is bad news. And then one guy identified where the bridge was and was like, is this the bridge on blah, blah, blah road? And I was like, oh, I'm in trouble now. Like,
dude, that's the best thing about living in New York is that like nobody cares. And I don't care if they care.
Yeah. Like what you need, the context most people I think would love to know about a lot of my shoe photos is that like maybe 10 feet away is just like people eating brunch at like an outdoor restaurant. And I am just taking photos of my shoes and like it's New York and no one even bats an eye or cares. It's great.
You must be a highly compensated professional fashion photographer.
Obviously, yeah, with my very basic setup and whatnot, and doing it all by myself. But yeah, no one cares. It's great. I love New York. It's the best.
It's a good place. I got to go back to take shoe pictures. So look, like we've now gotten to the point in these journeys where we're getting it. Like we've got something. We really start to care. We're understanding what it's all about, how it's made, why it's different, why it's better. Starting to feel it, that's when it all really starts. So again, like we have too many stories to tell, certainly to continue this episode. We're definitely not just going to like keep hammering you with these things next episode, but like hit us up. Let us know if this is even remotely interesting or entertaining or something that you can relate to, because we can keep going and, you know, we'll do it later this season, next season, something like that. So seriously, like DM us, email us, whatever it is. Let us know and tell us if you don't want to hear this too. Like we're all about the feedback, but that's it. That's like, I don't know. That's pretty good. Here we are.
It's been a fun journey and I'm really glad that both of our journeys have brought us together, Ben, to this very, very strange place where we do this podcast about high-end shoes together. It's a good place to be. I'm glad to be here and I appreciate you, man.
I do this podcast for sweet moments like that. Thanks, Ticho. I feel the same. But look, let's get out of here. One more shout out, Mark Albert Boots. Check out the Chelseas. Check out the Kudu. Check out everything that he's got. Check out the episode that we did with him. It was a great interview. Take a look at what he's doing, but really the industry at large. Big thanks again to Mark for coming on. And yeah, we'll see if we'll do another one of these. But that's it for today. Take care of your shoes. We'll see you next time.